This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stasio. More than 500 measures survived the crossover deadline in the General Assembly. Now lawmakers have to sort out their priorities on which of those will go to the governor's desk. And new projections on the state's finances show a budget surplus of $400 million. How'd that happen, and where should the funds go? At the federal level, an appeals court declares phone data collected by the NSA under the Patriot Act illegal. At the same time, North Carolina Senator and Intelligence Committee Chair Richard Burr calls for an extension of the Patriot Act, which is set to expire at the end of the month. Joining me now is political junkie Ken Rudin. Welcome back, Ken.
Thank you, Frank.
We will first hear from our senator, the senior senator from North Carolina, Richard Burr, who supports the NSA's ability to gather that data. And yesterday on the Senate floor, he called for a reauthorization of the Patriot Act.
Why in the world would we think about rolling back the tools that are the only tools that put us post 9/11 versus pre 9/11? The threat is greater today domestically and around the world than it's ever been. And the argument that we will be consumed with is whether we do away with tools that have been effective for law enforcement to protect America.
There's Richard Burr. Ken, what impact do you think that ruling is going to have now at this crucial moment for the reauthorization of the Patriot Act?
Well, I think that the timing is very interesting. It comes right as Congress is about to get into a full-scale debate over this. As you say, the Patriot Act expires June 1st, so they have less than a month to decide what to do with it. And obviously, the court will force their hand. Now, there are some people like, I mean, basically, this is the old privacy versus national security debate that we've been having for, I guess, in the history of the country, and certainly since 9/11. But the argument is, of course, Burr and Mitch McConnell, the Senate Republican leader, says that this has basically kept us safe, that if we had this kind of information prior to September 11th, that those attacks may never have happened. I mean, that's their argument. And there are others who say, regardless of whether it's constitutional or not, the Patriot Act does not allow, if you look at the wording of the Patriot Act, it does not allow these broad accumulations of phone records and things like that for millions of people in the United States. Now, there are a lot of people who say the point is President Obama has argued for this for the longest time, too. It says it's not violating confidentiality. It's not violating the Constitution. It's not listening to the phone calls. It's just gathering the information just in case. But, of course, this court decision changes a lot of things, and obviously the Congress is going to have to decide within less than a month.
Well, and as you suggest, this ruling plays into and against some party preferences in interesting ways. Within the GOP party, this has created some divisions, right?
Well, you know, it seems like the Democrats are on board with these changes, even though for the longest time, Dianne Feinstein, who had been the chairman of the Intelligence Committee and President Obama, was arguing in favor of this. But the Democrats seem to be definitely amenable to changes. But, Frank, you're absolutely right. The Republican Party is split because while you have Richard Burr and Mitch McConnell, you have senators like Rand Paul of Kentucky, who's running for president, and Mike Lee of Utah, and other Republicans who say this is just, you know, a further examples of big government that can't go on. And we've seen also in the House, James Sensenbrenner, the congressman from Wisconsin, is pushing his bill on the Intelligence Committee in the House and is likely to make those changes. So the Republican Party is split not only between the House and Senate, but within the Senate itself. And that's what McConnell has to wrestle with before that vote.
Well, there have been some interesting kind of political topsy-turvy issues here in the state of North Carolina. For instance, the latest projections now on the state's finances, state of North Carolina, show a $400 million surplus. Now, the last time we checked back in February, there was a shortfall of over $200 million, in fact, over $250 million. Now we're $400 million plus. And Republicans say, see, we told you, those tax changes are working. They're bringing in more revenues, not less. All of your gloom and doom, Democratic Party, about how the state is going to starve for resources, not true. We were right. Look at this, a big surplus in the state of North Carolina.
Yeah, so they have the surplus, but now that old argument about the gloom and doom is gone. Now the argument is, what do we do with this money? There are some Republicans, and most of the Republicans in the leadership say, let's save this for a rainy day fund. You never know when those numbers could change. Just as quickly as it changed this year, it could change again, and we could, you know, be on a deficit. Where there are other people who say, no, we need to fund, you know, the courts, and we need to increase starting teacher pay, and we have to, you know, do all these more money for infrastructure. But it reminds me of what happened in California. For the longest time, California had a huge deficit. Jerry Brown, in his third term, 4 years ago or so, raised taxes pretty heavily. They're out of the deficit, and now they have a surplus. And once they got a surplus, Democratic members of the legislature said, okay, let's start spending it. Let's spend it on all the things that have been ignored all these years. But Jerry Brown is basically standing up to his fellow Democrats and saying, no, we need rainy day funds because, again, you know, the economy is precarious and it could, you know, turn on a dime. So North Carolina is wrestling with the same kind of issues that California seems to have been dealing with.
Well, at two levels. One, how to spend it. But the other issue that you put your finger on, Governor Brown raised taxes, and it turns out so did the North Carolina legislature, but they called it a tax cut. And that is what Democrats are pointing to now. You said that these tax cuts were going to lead to increased revenues because of increased economic productivity. That didn't happen. In fact, you raised taxes on the poor, you raised taxes on the middle class, you raised taxes on small businesses, which we're now finding out. And as people filled out their tax forms, small businesses and older people especially found out, wait a minute, my tax bill went up, not down. And that's why we have $400 million more. So that is also now part of the debate that's going on and part of the interesting fireworks politically.
Yeah, I always love when people will not say the word tax increases. They'll always use it in different words. And, you know, it's just remarkable how much that language goes on in the country. And now the playing with the language is so prevalent.
There were tax cuts for upper income tax levels and for corporations. They, however, did. And in fact, because of the increased revenues, there will be more tax cuts for corporations. All very interesting to see how this plays out politically. Ken, we mentioned two of many bills at the General Assembly. One, a House proposal that freezes a percentage of renewable energy that can be used in the state. That could also put a freeze on the growth in the solar industry. So you've got a Republican legislature that might want to do away with solar credits that encourages solar production in this state, and a governor who wants to produce more jobs. Is there going to be tension there?
There is tension already, and the tension is already seen. I mean, we see that the people who support solar energy will make the argument that it has already created 25,000 jobs with all this green energy programs and things like that. But, of course, the opponents, and many of them in the Republicans in the legislature, say this could very well lead and result in higher energy prices. But, you know, North Carolina has a reputation of being very renewable energy conscious. And I saw that Governor McCrory just extended tax credits for renewable energy projects. So he's trying to walk a little tightrope there on whether to extend the amount of relying on renewable energies, and of course the Republicans who would like to just, you know, tamp that down.
North Carolina Supreme Court set a date to hear arguments in the redistricting case. That case was sent back to them by the U.S. Supreme Court last month. Opponents of redistricting say this isn't expedited. This process is not fast enough. What do we expect to see in this case?
Well, you know, I mean, obviously the proponents are saying that the redistricting that happened in 2011 they relied on race, and that was the argument. But the Republicans will say, oh no, courts have already upheld our redistricting plans, and we expect it to happen again. But we're going to, obviously, the court says that we're going to have a decision by August to decide whether to redo the lines, the drawing of the lines. They were both on the congressional level and the legislative level. Republican leaders are confident that these lines will be maintained.
All right. On the national front, a few more candidates declared their intention to run for president. Give us the list.
Well, in the past week, we had Bernie Sanders, now the only challenger so far, at least on the Democratic side, to Hillary Clinton. And we doubled the field, the Republican field, with Carly Fiorina, the former Hewlett-Packard executive, Ben Carson, the retired pediatric neurosurgeon, and Mike Huckabee, the former governor of Arkansas, who won the Iowa caucuses 8 years ago. And now there are six Republicans officially in, but of course we have people like Jeb Bush, Scott Walker, maybe Chris Christie, although the indictments in New Jersey so certainly don't help his case, and other Republicans who are waiting to get in as well. It's going to be interesting to be easier to list those who are not running for president, like Frank Stacio.
Stay tuned. Stay tuned.
Okay, well,
yeah, the show is not over yet.
The buttons are ready, though.
And, of course, this means, as particularly since the Republican Party here has decided to push up the date for the primary, North Carolina will no doubt once again play an important part, this time maybe in the primary process, do you think?
Well, again, we've talked about this on your show before. When you have primaries in May, which has been the case with North Carolina for so many times, it's just never been consequential, because by the time that we get around to May, nominees in both parties have been decided. But if we're going to have the North Carolina primary in early March, which it looks like will be the case, and with all these candidates, if they're still in the race, they could play North Carolina could play a huge role in the Republican battle for the nomination.
All right, we will stay tuned. Thank you, Ken.
Good luck with your campaign.
I'll collect the buttons from you after the show. Ken Rudin, the political junkie. Just ahead, we're going to take a look at some new legislation that would stop the posting of so-called revenge porn on the Internet. You'll find out more about that on the State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. Please stay with us.